Je suis très heureux d'être dans la position de d'abord féliciter le LAL pour ses 50 ans et aussi de parler et faire une revue de notre passé commun sur la physique des particules. Mais vu le français impeccable que j'ai entendu par les langues pour parler personnes pour qui c'est la langue maternelle, j'ai quand même décidé de vous pas torturer avec mon français limité et de parler en anglais, et mes transparents vont être en anglais. Voilà. I will talk about CNRS, appui sur, on LAL, but I should also say I will talk a little bit about France, because as you saw this morning, it's very difficult to just cut out a little piece and then forget about the rest. And so if I start with my first transparency is to say that French scientists have been deeply involved in the science at DESY since 1976, mostly in the close collaboration between CNRS and CNRS, IN2P3 and CA in Saclay. The main areas of this involvement were and still are particle physics, accelerator development, and science with X-rays. This newest thing is, of course, not the mission of LAL, but through the accelerator, it has become intrinsically part of the activities. The collaboration started really with the CELLO experiment, which was mentioned already this morning at the electron positron storage ring. It continued very strongly with the HERA program, where France contributed both to the experiment and to the construction of the accelerator. And in 1992, the Tesla collaboration formed, which was also mentioned already, and the collaboration extended to include the development of superconducting technology for accelerators and for building the X-ray free electron laser. So let's follow that list of involvements, and let us start with looking at CELLO. Looking back at CELLO from today, I must say the DESY management at that time, I think, made one mistake. It decided to have one experiment in a push-pull situation. And you can realize that this always is to the disfavor of one of the either the guy gets pushed or pulled. And CELLO, I think, in being in the situation that another experiment was in the interaction position when the big excitement about the discovery of the gluon started, was in a disfavored position. It emphasized later on very much other areas of physics, but due to this boundary condition, missed out to some extent, at least, to the excitement in 1979-1980. So collaboration in France was Saclay-Orsay and Paris-6, and you have seen already this experiment. So let me just go to one of the trademarks of this laboratory, liquid argon calorimetry. Now, I don't think that this is the end cap which was built. I thought I saw it in Joël's talk this morning, but it's the end cap was built here in Orsay. Let me just pick one example of very nice physics. At that time, we had all sorts of puzzles of things didn't fit together, and one was the missing channels in the tau decay. And CELLO did the first global analysis of all decay channels of the tau lepton, particularly the multi-neutral final states, and solved the so-called one-prong problem, and said everything is okay, and everything what was missing before that was identified as the case with several neutral pions. And why CELLO was so successful in this was because it had this beautiful liquid argon calorimetry. The next step was the HERA collider with the experiments which you have seen on the previous transparencies, H1, the one with the French contribution, and the rest of it, you see, this is HERA, and this is, these are the other machines, this is Petra here. CELLO was at this position. Now, The first contribution of France to HERA was a very noticeable and important contribution to the accelerator. The quadrupoles for the superconducting proton machine were developed, designed, prototypes built, etc., by Saclay. We have heard already about their impressive engineering capabilities. And the mass production was then also done under the supervision. And in total, they contributed 246 all superconducting quadrupoles. The experiment itself had, of course, like these big experiments with more between 300 and 400 collaborators, many institutions. LAL is among a large number of French institutions and made vital contributions to main components in their operation over the years. Liquid argon colorimetry, backward colorimeter, tungsten fiber Cherenkov photon detector, and most recently, and really as a LAL activity, laser cavity for precision polarimeter. I don't know if we profited, so at least not to my knowledge, but it might be have profited from the activities we just heard about for the Virgo activities. This is a typical event, deep inelastic scattering at 350 GeVs. And you see the very nice electron being backscattered with an energy 10 times higher than the energy of the with which the electron came into the interaction region. You see the beautiful energy flow measurement in the chambers and the back-to-back event of this event. You have seen in Violette's talk this morning the nice measurement of the charge and neutral current cross-section, so I'm not showing this. I show the one other major discovery of HERA, which is the sudden rise of the density of partons at very low X inside the proton. This was the measurement in, after essentially the first year of data taking. HERA started data taking 1992, and already there you saw up to that point, the measurements were up to 10 to the minus 2 in X, and people naively expected it would continue like this, but the total contrary was the case. And today you see the same picture with much, much higher precision. And there's a recent article by Frank Wilczek who said that the evolution of the structure function and the fact that the proton is viewed at every higher resolution would appear more and more as a field energy, namely as soft gluons, was only clearly verified at HERA 20 years after the prediction of this effect. And I think people have not really paid very much attention to the prediction when it was made. Now, the outlook on HERA is what concerns the operation of the machine limited, in the sense that the machine will stop in 1 year's time. There's a number of things which will be addressed with the increased luminosity, search for new phenomena, increase of data samples, and precision tests and future developments of QCD. But then there's one topic which makes use of the new feature of HERA, namely to make use of the polarized electrons and positrons, and I make that is in order to look for right-handed currents by looking at the cross-charge current cross-section as function of the polarization. And one expects in the standard model zero cross-section for P minus one. And of course, a key ingredient in that is to measure the polarization with high accuracy. And here comes in this very new polarimeter based on a Fabry-Perot type optical cavity, which was built here in the lab and which is functioning very nicely in the HERA beam. Let me switch gears and come to the other area of strength of LAL, which is, as we heard several times today, the accelerator development. And here again, I have a list of contributions of France to DAISY and to the Tesla project, that is to the Tesla test facility and the development of the superconducting technology over the years. I'm not going to read the list, but it's a very impressive list. I come back to those parts which are really in the Orsay responsibility. This shows a status of the Tesla collaboration in 2004. This collaboration now continues under the name of the Tesla Technology Collaboration. And here in this box, you see the French participation, which is DAPNIA, which is LAL Orsay, and the ENP Orsay. The goal when the collaboration was set up, the goal was to develop this technique, which at that time was promising but not very far developed, because it had the potential of very high luminosity, high power efficiency, and relatively relaxed tolerances for a linear collider. And the challenges were to get high acceleration gradients and a relatively moderate cost. And I think if you look at this development of the cavity gradient, when the collaboration started, the value were between 5 and 7 megavolt per meter. Nowadays, some cavities have even reached close to 50 megavolt per meter, and there is the physical limit due to the magnetic field. So what has the collaboration has achieved with much input from really by uniting essentially the know-how from around the world is a more than probably 30 to 40 times increase in the performance over cost in 10 years. And that is a major achievement. And that had, of course, a major impact on the next generation of light sources, of neutron sources. The spallation neutron source in Oak Ridge, halfway through its sort of halfway through being built, changed the technology for the LINAC to superconducting technology because of these effects. And now, of course, we are, lots of machines are considering that. And one of the first machines to be built, big machines to be built in that technology, is the European X-ray free electron laser. That is a machine where you start with a gun with a very low emittance electron beam, accelerate the electron beam in structures which do not destroy the emittance, and that is the superconducting structures. You then go through a magnet structure, an undulator, and in the undulator you have an amplification process which leads to an exponential growth of the intensity up to saturation, with the result that you get a brilliance out of this light source which is 9 orders of magnitude higher than what you get out of classical light sources. 9 orders of magnitude you don't achieve easily in physics. And so the question is, what is the magic behind that amplification? The reason is very simple. What happens in this process is that you bunch the electrons in this original bunch emitted by the photocathode in very small slices whose length, physical length, is smaller than the wavelength of the light which is emitted. And these slices therefore act as a dipole charge, and the irradiated power of a dipole goes with the square of the charge and not linear with the charge, which is in a standard synchrotron light source. So you get a factor power 2 for free, and as you are dealing with roughly 10 to the 9 electrons per bunch, that's where the 10 to the 9 amplification comes from. The pulses are 20 femtoseconds long, 1,000 times shorter than what you get in synchrotron light sources that we have measured. Furthermore, it's a laser, that means the radiation is coherent, and the wavelength is tunable because it depends strict only on 1 over E, the electron energy. And based on this, originally only on the accelerator and gradient development, the collaboration built the Tesla test facility, which then led to this laser idea. And the reason why you want to build such a laser is the following. Today, synchrotron light is used very intensely and successfully in understanding static structures of molecules, of surfaces, etc. But what you really like to have is to have a movie of what is going on. It's like the difference between looking at a picture book or going to the cinema. Seeing a movie of something just tells you much more. And so you would like to see processes from atomic molecular physics, plasma physics, you name it, condensed matter physics, and see the development of the structures on the time scale, which is the natural time scale for these processes to occur, and that is in the order of 50, 10 to 50 to 100 femtoseconds. As I said, the collaboration set out to build LINAC, which originally consisted out of two so-called modules. One module has 8 cavities. Today it is a machine which has 5 modules reaching 750 MeV, and just these days the 6th module is being assembled to reach 1 GeV. Then it consists out of a gun, to which I come back later, and the undulator structure, and at the end we have the laser light. The machine runs and has produced laser light for a couple of years now. Last summer it was therefore transformed for part of the time in a user facility, and the machine was running so far at 30 nanometer. This April we reached 13 nanometers, and that is the shortest wavelength ever reached in a free electron laser. And what is amazing, what amazes me each time, but I think also the people who had done the calculations, that this machine or this laser really functions as calculated. The other thing is, I mentioned before, you would like to take movies or at least see snapshots of processes really on which take place on the femtosecond scale. Now, we can't test that yet with the ultimate wavelengths which we will get in this machine, which is an angstrom, 0.1 nanometer, but we can test, can we image any structure with a single single light flash from the laser. And people made this experiment. They created an artificial structure. You see the scale here. They etched into a silicon nitride plate these figures. There were some defaults in the plate, and then they took one single shot from the laser and analyzed the image, and what they find is this. So they really showed that with a single shot from that laser you can analyze the structure. You not only see the structure, you even see the dirt. So reconstruction resolution is roughly 60 nanometers. So image is fully reconstructed with high resolution and no sign of destruction. That is a correct statement, because the challenge was to know, does this high power of the laser actually blow up what you want to image before you have the time to see it? And the answer is no, it doesn't. The time constants of the explosion are longer than the pulse length of it takes to, or the light it takes to image the thing. If the second pulse coming a second later essentially saw a hole, that's expected, but it was proven by the experiment. So so the next step is then to go to 0.1 nanometer, and that is the design of the European X-ray free electron laser. A 2 kilometer long LINAC with roughly 920 cavities. For each of these cavities, there is a coupler, and I mentioned that only because we come back later to that. So it's a roughly 20 GeV LINAC, and reaching, the design is based on an acceleration gradient, which we have absolutely in hand now of 25 megavolt per meter. Now, as I said, the power going into the superconducting cavities has to enter the vacuum through a so-called coupler. And you heard already before today that this is one of the major contributions of LAL. They have set up in one of, I think, behind here, a facility to condition, to test, to develop couplers. They are now also doing the industrial studies. And here you see both a coupler in the test stand and, of course, a klystron, which is needed then to test it. So that's a major contribution. Just to inform you where we stand with the European X-ray free electron laser project, the German government in February 2006 gave the go-ahead as a European project, included the funding of 50% of the then 664 million euro. And this budget is now put firmly into the midterm funding planning of the German government. 40% is required by European partners, and 10% comes from the state, the local, you would say, the region. We are at the moment in the preparatory phase, which informally ends this summer, in this phase has as a goal to prepare the technical design report, which has been finished, which has been very positively reviewed, and also to prepare all the necessary rules and regulations for setting up a European institution. That is still under work, but also more or less finished. 13 countries have signed a memorandum of understanding for the preparatory phase, and you see here it's not only Europe anymore, it is China, I wouldn't strictly call Europe, and France is among them. This is just showing who in Europe has signed on to that. The time schedule at the moment is that we hope in this year to end everything such that early next year we can dig the first hole in the ground. The construction time lasts until end of 2012 with commissioning in 2013. Jonathan, I don't know if you spoke about the LCLS yesterday. That is the time when the LCLS comes in. But we have, as I showed you before, the one advantage that at a different wavelength we already have a machine which runs and does physics. So if that time gap isn't growing, then I think Europe is in an excellent position to continue in this friendly competition. Now, I mentioned already that the electrons have to be produced, and they are produced in a so-called RF gun. There's an effort at the moment which is European and located at the DESY lab in Zeuthen, which is to develop very low emittance RF guns for free electron lasers, but also for linear colliders. And there are contributions from LAL to that facility, and the present spokesperson is Terry Garvey. Final point is the International Linear Collider. You know that we all hope that we will discover revolutionary new things at the LHC, and there's a worldwide consensus that the LHC has to be complemented by a linear collider. In summer 2004, the world community decided to build the ILC in the Tesla technology. And LAL and DESY collaboration will continue and profit from the lessons learned from FLASH and the strong synergy with the XFEL to contribute as much as possible to the ILC. We get support for our collaboration with France, but also the other countries, from strong support through the European Union. And we are focusing on many aspects of accelerator R&D, superconducting RF, ILC design, XFEL, and detector design. I can't omit at least one physics plot for the possible importance of the synergy between LHC and ILC, assuming that we are living in a supersymmetric world. Then you have a number of SUSY parameters which you need to measure as precisely as possible in order to get the full picture. If you had LHC only, and the same would hold true if you had ILC only, you would measure these parameters with fairly large uncertainties. If you add ILC and LHC, all these error bars shrink to an invisible width on this transparency. So it really shows that putting both together really has a tremendous impact on our understanding of this particular physics, but it's also true, of course, in other areas. Now, the ILC consists not only out of an accelerator, but also out of a detector, and there's a lot of detector work going on because, although it's much less ambitious in terms of radiation hardness compared to an LHC detector, is extremely ambitious in terms of energy resolution, of momentum resolution, etc. So a lot of new ideas have come up which at the moment are developed. I just want to mention one. This is the calorimeter study of the electromagnetic calorimeter in the CALIS collaboration and the Hadron calorimeter. Here, seen in a test beam at DESY, and the test beam at CERN will start in July. In the center here, you see, I don't need to say who has built this one, the front end electronics comes from here. It's the electronics for the electromagnetic calorimeter. These green lights here are the Hadron calorimeter, and the ASICs of the front end electronics are again coming from the very successful development of the superconducting RF technology has been reached in international partnerships, so that's more than just the two of us, but I think we have formed a very, very good team in that. The activities of the Tesla collaboration have significantly influenced many other accelerator projects. XFAL will provide a new generation, and I think the world enthusiasm for the linear collider aiming at a political decision. Well, I don't know if I'm too optimistic here, but at least in the coming years. So this is all I wanted to say about the collaboration between Lal and Daisy, but let me end with bon anniversaire and many happy returns. Many thanks.